This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! All right, we are back. This is episode number 6 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers. And we did it, right? It's a good time to be a Longhorn fan. Fresh off of a 48-45 victory over those Oklahoma Sooners. And it was a great game in Dallas. Everything you could have asked for as a Longhorn fan. Gave us a little bit of a scare there towards the end, but I think the team acquitted themselves very well. And so we'll get into that game and what it means on a national perspective. Because some things are a little different now. Texas now goes from being the number 19 ranked team in the country, and with OU being number 7 at the time, and then a number of other teams losing as well, we now sport a 5-1 record and are the number 9 team in the land. And I don't know when the last time I could say that about a Texas team is. Probably back to like the 2009 team maybe, but it feels good. It definitely feels good. And it's a testament to these guys of how they turned around a difficult outing against Maryland the first game of the year, and have been able to bounce back from that very nicely and be able to put together a string of games. So we'll dive right into that. I'm not really drinking anything tonight, whiskey wise, but if I were, I probably would have broken open my I got a bottle of Rock Hill Farms that I've been meaning to try and haven't had a chance to crack it open just yet. I may hold off until this weekend to do that. But give that a shot if you haven't already. I had a chance to taste it once. It was pretty good. And so I grabbed the bottle. I just haven't opened it up yet. So if you're looking for something new to try, maybe give that a shot. So we'll dive right into the game. First of all, it was really cool to be able and turn on, College Game Day that morning and see them live from, the Cotton Bowl. And because I was on the way to the watch party I told you guys about last week, I didn't really get to see all the picks and everything. But from what I can tell, it was a good show. It definitely, a lot of people spoke highly of us. Not everybody picked us, which is fine. But I think this team kind of prefers it that way. And I think you, in the things that you hear them talking about, they're starting to grow up in that regard, that they're really buying into the 1-0 mantra, to just going back to work every single game and making sure that they're doing everything they can to put the best product of Texas football out on the field. And so, I think in front of 92,300 folks on Saturday, you saw that. And I mean, a lot of things came out of this game. A lot of possibilities opened up for this team, exercise some demons, if you will. I mean, hell, an OU coach even got fired, right? So Mike Stoops, longtime brother of Bob Stoops, longtime defensive coordinator and brother of Bob Stoops, was fired after that game. And the crazy thing about it is it's kind of weird how college football works, in that, if they had won that game, he doesn't get fired the next day. And I think more than anything, people were probably shocked that he even came back after last season. Maybe that was trying to pay some homage to Coach Stoops that was before Lincoln, and, just trying to hold on and see if he could make some things turn around. But they continue to, just struggle. And I really, I knew that they didn't have a great defense, but I was surprised at, how poor of a defense they had. There was really nobody that stood out to me. Didn't seem like they really had playmakers. Anytime a ball went up, I didn't ever really feel like we had any fear of, having to contest for it. I felt good about our guys' chances coming down for it. And I think that we did a really good job. I'll be 100% honest. I was around a bunch of OU fans, and when Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, went out there and scored on that very first drive. I mean, OU scores quick, and that could also be, you know, to some of their team's detriment defensively. But I mean, that first drive was only like 2 minutes and 40 seconds. It lasted six plays. And before you knew it, Kyler's, you know, scrambling out to the left and does the, you know, run pass option, dumps it off to Marquise Brown for the easy touchdown. And I was pretty concerned, you know, I was kind of looking around like, oh, man, you know, here we go. Just, you know, we're not able to stop them. They're going to be marching up and down the field all game. But, you know, I think Coach Herman and Tim Beck, you know, they deserve a lot of credit. They came right back out, and they did a really good job of putting together a drive that would respond, putting together a drive that would get the team going pretty quickly, you know, came right out. Now, one thing I still can't understand is how we get these little weird penalties, you know, like starting the game off with a delay of game just always leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But I mean, immediately got two big pass plays, one to Lil Jordan, another to Colin. And before you knew it, I mean, we were, you know, in OU territory and about to, you know, make that first push. And so it was a cool little wrinkle the way they threw in there with the Lil Jordan running the Wildcat and doing the jump pass to Colin. Perfectly called drive. And I think just the perfect answer to, you know, what OU did. And then the very next drive that OU had the ball, it was three and out. So, you know, great way for Texas to start the game. And then the very next drive saw, you know, us go down and be able to get a field goal. And so just like that, you know, from being set down 7-0, we were up 10-7. And I think that was pretty big for the Texas football team to be able to come away like that. As the game kind of progressed, though, especially in that first half, I felt like we had a really good handle on things. You saw Trey Watson catch the wheel route that a lot of people have been wondering, where has it been? And that capped a 75-yard 10-play drive. So we had, you know, some sustained drives that allowed us to really control the clock. When you look at, you know, how that all panned out, 33 minutes, 50 seconds in the time of possession compared to OU's 26 minutes and 10 seconds time of possession. So, you know, keeping them off the field was huge. They only ran 58 plays. Now, they were very efficient on those 58 plays because they still rolled up 532 yards of offense. But we were able to cut back on the penalties, you know, went from the week prior having 10 to this week only having 6. And once again, did a great job protecting the ball. No turnovers to, you know, them having, what was it, 2 or 3? I know they definitely had a couple fumbles that they lost. And then Kyler threw an interception. So, you know, it was really impressive to see how the team continued to respond at every turn in the game. And, you know, especially asserting themselves going into the half. Now, you would have liked to see us, you know, remain up 24-10 and not give up that touchdown to CeeDee Lamb. But to be able to come out and on the opening drive go in and score another touchdown was really, really great to see. I was concerned all week about the matchup of some of their receivers on some key guys in our secondary, particularly with PJ Locke. And I haven't gone back to watch the film again, but I just felt like I saw him chasing after Marquise Brown in that second half when he scored that big 77-yard touchdown. And it was interesting to hear Tom Herman say after the game that he told the recruiting guys that he needed to find guys with speed like that. And that's something that I've shared with, you know, friends in the past that I haven't been seeing in the Texas recruiting classes is guys that I like to say can pick them up and put them down. So, you know, you have some guys that have some straight line speed, your John Burtz of the world, even Gerard Hurd, But nobody that really strikes fear into you. I remember watching Ohio State play, I think last year maybe, and it was like number 21, just scared the bejesus out of me. Even when we went to USC, they had a couple guys last year that could really just go. I mean, and I feel like we've kind of been lacking that in the Texas offenses as of late. You know, we had that back in the day with Ramondre Taylor and even with the Shipleys some. But just guys that, you know, truly have speed, I guess Marquise, but I still felt like he was never fully utilized to what his true abilities would be. But, you know, just having some guys that would be true difference makers. I know we lost out in the recruitment of Rondale Moore, but if anyone's kept up with what Purdue has been doing this year, I mean, he's been a complete star. So just imagine having him in the offense that we currently have, you know, to coincide with, why are their names escaping me? Colin and Lil Jordan. And then even Devin Duvernay, you know, coming out of high school, I had kind of looked at him almost like a poor man's Percy Harvin, if you will. Just felt like they were built kind of the same, had some similar game to him, and thought that he was really going to be a game changer. But he's just turned into more of a sure-handed receiver than I knew he would be. Even a guy that you can count on to pick up some key first downs. But all in all, when you take a look at it, I mean, the game was truly in hand when, you know, you go up 45-24 with 56 seconds left in the third quarter. And I think everybody was feeling pretty good about themselves. And I think that's the next step that I'd like to see this team take is when you have the opponent down, really step on their throat. And I think that comes with time. I think that comes with, you know, being used to winning. I hope that they're getting used to what that feeling is like and now ready to take that next step, which is, you know, just true, utter dominance. And I think had they done that, then we wouldn't have had the scare that we had at the end because OU's offense can score in a flash. You know, grand total of, let's see, I can count it up live here. When they got cut it to within 14 and got the score to 45-31, that drive was 2-minute drive. The very next drive they have is the big Kyler Murray run. It took him 11 seconds. And then the next drive was only 1:05. So before you know it, they've only run 10 plays, barely taken a little over 3 minutes off the clock and put up 21 points. So when you're playing a team like that, you really have to stick what they're doing. And I felt like we kind of got away from some of the things that we had been having success with in those moments. And, you know, you hate to see teams do that. You know, I always used to hate it when I would see a team go into prevent defense when they're up pretty big and then guys just pick up huge chunk yards and move it down the field pretty effortlessly. And, you know, it almost seemed like offensively, we went into like a prevent offense, if you will, you know, just kind of took our foot off the gas. Extremely, extremely conservative, not really doing a whole lot to, you know, put pressure on the defense. And, you know, before you know it, we were a couple 3-and-outs and, you know, they're right back into the game. And so, but I mean, at the end of the day, win's a win, right? We got, Cameron Dicker came out, made a clutch field goal with 9 seconds left on the clock. And I mean, as a kid from Austin, he's, you know, out of Lake Travis. I can only imagine that is exactly what, you know, he could have scripted. Or he couldn't have scripted anything, any kind of a better ending than just that. And so it was really, really impressive. You know, was happy to see Keyontae Ingram a little more involved. I think I had said that if he didn't have 18 to 22, I want to say maybe I said 18 touches, that I would be pretty confident that we lost the game. And I was wrong. You know, Sam ended up carrying the ball 19 times for 84 yards. That's still, you know, for the offense that we're running, I get it. I hate that he has to carry the ball as much as he does, or that he did carry the ball as much as he does. But, you know, when it was all said and done, he was effective. He was able to score three touchdowns on the ground. He was able to keep the chains moving at key times. But, you know, you still see Keontae Ingram there with his average of 6.6 yards a carry. And it's just hard for me to believe that, you know, as the year goes on, we can't continue to give that kid more and more work, because he is impressive with the ball in his hands. Trey Watson did a little bit of, you know, didn't do much damage on the ground. He only had 6 carries for 19 yards, but you tally it all up, 38 carries for 177 yards was what the net, you know, yardage was at the end of the day. So it was a really good day for the Texas offense. You know, like I said earlier, over 500 yards on the ground, over 500 yards of total offense. Sam was 24 for 35, 314 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, and no interceptions. So again, taking care of the ball, you can win. You can win a lot of games with some stat lines like that. And people around the country are really taking notice now. And, you know, again, this has been a while since we've been getting this kind of attention, but Sam was named the Davey O'Brien National Quarterback of the Week. He was named the Earl Campbell Tyler Rose Award Player of the Week. He was named the Maxwell Award Player of the Week, was added to the Maxwell Award watch list. When you take a look at from a special teams perspective, Cameron Dicker was named the Groza Award Star of the Week. And then little Jordan Humphrey was added to the Biletnikoff Award watch list. And he had a new career high of 9 receptions for 133 yards. He caught a touchdown pass. He threw a touchdown pass. I mean, we're talking about some seriously strong individual efforts here that really, you know, led to some serious production on the Texas end of the ball. And then not to, you know, fully be outdone, Collins still had 6 receptions for 81 yards and a touchdown. And they were able to sprinkle in, you know, some big plays even to Devin Duvernay, Andrew Beck, to keep the chains moving. And then it seems like we're running this every week, this quarterback pass back. I mean, a lot of people are trying to do variations of the Philly special, but it's working for us. I hate, you know, exposing Sam to any more punishment than we have to, but he's been sure-handed whenever that play's been called. And, you know, it was just all in all, it was a good game. Brandon Jones, if you flip to the defensive side of the ball, Brandon Jones had a big game, had 9 tackles and an interception, you know, that was a very timely interception. Caden Stearns had 7 tackles. And then BJ Foster, I thought, performed really well and even had a sack along with the pass breakup. And I was thinking that he could be, you know, a big difference in the game, had 2 tackles for a loss. So you got some of the young guys really, really stepping up. Gary Johnson was a little quiet. I was expecting him to have a bigger game, but he did recover a fumble. And, you know, I think he was probably so keyed in on, you know, Kyler Murray. I did notice a lot of times he was spying, but would sometimes get caught up in the trash of the offensive linemen where he couldn't really do as much damage as, you know, maybe you would hope. But again, I mean, you're nitpicking at this point. It was a great game. It was a great, great called game. And these are things that they can grow on. There was still enough there that they can go and take a look at the film and see where they had an opportunity to put the game even more out of sight and to really cement themselves back in some of the top for the college football elite. But now you're the number 9 team in the country. So everybody's talking about you. And granted, you know, a number of other teams did lose, but now we're starting to take a look at some of this national conversation. So like I was saying, you're, you know, the number 9 team in the AP poll, number 14 in the coaches poll, which is always interesting to me because in the coaches poll, we're still behind OU. And I don't see how you can be 5-1, same record, just beat the other team and they remain in front of you. But I mean, at the end of the day, some of this stuff will, you know, begin to take care of itself. You have West Virginia sitting there at number six in both polls and have them come into Austin, fortunately. So everything's in front of you. I mean, if you look at the schedule, got Baylor coming to Austin this week. And then next week we'll have a bye before a big game at Oklahoma State. Then West Virginia comes to town. Then you're at Tech. Iowa State comes to town, and then finish up with Kansas the day, I guess that's the day after Thanksgiving, maybe. And so, you know, very winnable games. Quite possibly, you know, could be looking at a team that's, I mean, right now they're 5-1, should be 6-1 after the Baylor game, and then, you know, have a tough four-game stretch. But if you had, you know, really called it at the beginning of the season, we thought this beginning stretch that they just wrapped up with Oklahoma, those last four games were predicted to be the toughest of the games, with USC, TCU, Kansas State, and Oklahoma. So, you know, by and large, in a lot of ways, the season is setting up nicely. You know, this Oklahoma State team looks a little more vulnerable than it had. Coming up, I'll be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of Baylor yet. And so I'm not as familiar with what they bring to the table. But I know that they do have a good coaching staff there that, you know, will have them ready to go. One of their coaches is former Longhorn Frank Ocam. So had a chance to go out and see him in the spring. And check out one of their practices, and they have some really talented guys on that team. So, you know, just hoping that the guys come together and really make sure that they stay focused. But from their comments at the Tuesday media availability, it really seemed like they have their heads on straight. Now, I'll tell you, the one thing that has kind of been frustrating in all this is that we've been the butt of jokes for so long that, you know, people still kind of make that, no, Texas is not back. And, you know, I think I would agree. I think that Texas still isn't back. You know, I think we still have a ways to go. But when you're taking a look at some of the teams that are in front of them, okay, you still got Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. I think they're the cream of the crop. Clemson's still there with them, but I think they're a step or two behind. Notre Dame has looked really good. West Virginia has looked really good. We'll get an opportunity to play them. Washington, Penn State, and then Texas when you're looking at the AP top 25. And then UCF rounds out the top 10. OU dropped down to number 11. So, you know, it would be something really impressive to see what the rankings are when the first college football playoff rankings come out later this month. See how they treat that Maryland loss. We've seen teams in the past have a early bad, you know, what would be considered a bad loss and still be able to recover. But I mean, it's crazy that we're even talking about this right now, right? I mean, before the season, this wasn't necessarily the expectation. I think most people, you know, kind of had us pegged at being an 8-4 team. Maybe some people were convincing themselves of 9-3, but, you know, ultimately we were looking for signs of good progress. Now it's almost to the point where, because of how they've played and being able to see them play at such a high level, you'd almost be disappointed if they don't, you know, improve upon that. I mean, at this point, I almost feel like 9-3 is the floor. Right. I mean, if anything, you know, you're maybe saying, OK, they lose two of the four games from Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Texas Tech and Iowa State. But I mean, why not run the table? I mean, what is really stopping them? Has ever anybody looked that unstoppable? Obviously, the most formidable of the remaining people on the schedule is Will Grier in West Virginia, but they don't have that second, what am I trying to say? That second level of difficulty when it comes to defending the quarterback by him being a running quarterback. He's not that. He's more of a traditional passer. And so I think that's something that Todd Orlando will be able to scheme for a little bit better. There's just some things that Kyler Murray did in that game that you just can't account for. I mean, that guy is fast. He's little. He looks like a bobblehead running around out there, but damn, he can move. Like, I've seen him at high school, seen him at the collegiate level, but witnessing him skate down that sideline on Saturday was impressive. And I'll be honest, I'm kind of hoping that OU loses one more game somewhere along the line. They still got some tough competition, because I'm not really all that interested in seeing them again in the Big 12 championship game. I'd much rather, possibly have to take on a West Virginia or something like that. But, you know, that'll be something that kind of takes care of itself as you continue to progress through the season. But these are legit conversations that we're going to have now. And I think one of the things that'll be interesting to see is how the team responds to that, how they're able to block out that noise. One of the things that we had the fortune of when I was playing is we were always highly ranked. And so, going into seasons, perennial 10 win teams, back to back to back to back. And so it was kind of the standard. These guys are resetting the standard. They don't know what it was like to play during times like that. I mean, it's been 9 years since that 2009 team. So, these guys were just kids, at that time. So they don't have the experience of being the hunted. I guess I take that back a little bit. Texas is always the hunted. So if you can kick us while we're down, you're going to do that. It seems like these guys have the right mix of players, though. You have your Hagers, your Gary Johnsons, Chris Boyds. And then offensively, I think Calvin Anderson has gone away to solidify. How about this offensive line? Let's talk about that real quick. Herb Hand has come in and done an excellent job, even though I still don't think they've reached their full potential. These guys are not getting pushed around. You cannot say that they are soft. That is one thing that the national media has been commenting about a great deal, is that in this game, they really dominated the trenches on both sides of the ball. And that was something that I think you have to do. You have to go in there and just establish yourselves and, show that we're not going to be pumped. We're not going to back down. We're going to keep coming at you play after play after play. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, for the vast majority of that game, Texas controlled everything that Oklahoma wanted. I mean, we were doing whatever it was that we wanted to do. And so you just want to see them continue to build on that, continue to have success that in that regard. And then now, it gets kind of fun. You get to kind of dream a little bit. I saw somewhere where there was a prediction of can't remember who it was that we were playing, but it was in the Fiesta Bowl. I don't think anybody would be opposed to going back out to Arizona. We had some success the last time we were there, and it'd be much better than some of these bowl games in Texas. No offense, but I'm ready to get back to some national prominence where we're playing some games that are out of state. We're playing some games on New Year's Day. And all of that is there for the taking. So this team has really put themselves in the driver's seat to accomplish a lot of things. And with that is going to come, some outside distractions. You're going to hear, the kids are going to have to contend with not reading the press clippings about themselves. And, again, it just sounds like they're all saying the right things about having that 1-0 mantra and really focusing on the next opponent. You can't really just, chalk this Baylor game up to an easy win. This Baylor team has a little bit of confidence. They're off to a 4-2 start, whereas last year, heading into the game, Baylor hadn't even won a game. And so their only major loss is to OU, and that was a 66-33 game. That being said, Baylor hasn't played or hasn't beat a team with a winning record just yet. So this is really going to, kind of help solidify where Baylor stands, but this is your classic letdown spot. I mean, you're coming off of, you know, several, you know, emotional games back to back to back. And then you're dealing with, you know, a kid coming back home in Charlie Brewer that played, you know, his high school ball at Lake Travis. He's been pretty consistent this year and has even, you know, shown a little running ability with four touchdowns on the ground. And so, you know, they've opened things up more there in Waco than you have in the past. And their offense is significantly improved. I want to say that Brewer threw for like 400 yards against OU. And then you have Jalen Hurd, that was the Tennessee transfer, and Denzel Mims, both out there at wide receivers. So, you know, big targets. And then they've even used Hurd in the running game some, where he scored two touchdowns on the ground in the last couple of games. So, you know, this is a game that you really can't take for granted. I'll be honest, this is the type of game that kind of concerns me when it comes to Tom Herman. You know, it seems like a lot of times he gets his guys up to play for the big games. And then, you know, you've seen when he was at U of H that they would lose to a UConn or a Navy sometimes. And so you just hope that this isn't that kind of a trend. But, you know, Texas should have its way on defense. Baylor's dead last in the Big 12 in scoring defense. They give up 32 points a game. And so that's going to be really good news for a Texas offense that's coming off of a game where it just put up 48. And so I think this is probably a week where you see the running backs get a bigger load. You see Trey Watson and Keontae Ingram, you know, get involved to a great deal, and you maybe rely on the bigs up front to really dominate that line of scrimmage, set the tone for that game. We're, you know, coming in as 14-point favorites, and Baylor has lost its last three games. And I know there was a time where, you know, you would just chalk a win up to Baylor, but in order for Texas to really continue to assert themselves, this is a game where they've got to take care of business. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be a good game. The game starts at 2:30 this afternoon. So, or I'm sorry, 2:30 Saturday afternoon. Looking forward to it being another great home crowd, and for Texas to go out there and take care of business. So with that being said, looking forward to getting a chance to take this game in and then take a look at some other things that I have planned content wise. Really thank you guys for listening, man. I this is something I do as kind of a labor of love, a passion project, if you will. And I hope that you're able to take something from it that you enjoy. Again, if you have any suggestions, please feel free to reach out. I'm at Marcus Myers on all social media. And then on the boards, if you see me on Orange Bloods, I'm Myers 4708, but continue to thank the Yak for giving me this platform. And, you know, just hope that this is something that we continue to grow and make something that's enjoyable for everybody that listens. So thanks again. And this has been Marcus Myers for the Until the Whistle podcast. Catch you the next time the whistle blows.